Hi everyone, it's Erin, and I'm here to talk about something I very rarely talk about on this podcast, something I frankly never talk about on this podcast, sports. You see, Windsor High School's boys basketball team had a banner year. They're usually very good anyway, they consistently make it to the state tournament, but this year was special. That's the team in the background, by the way, celebrating their semifinal win on March 7th. They were officially headed to the championship game for the first time since 2011. If they won, it would have been the team's first state title in 100 years. As many of you may already know, that didn't happen. After a big comeback in the last half of their final game, they ended up falling to Mesa Ridge High School, 57-53. Sadly, Windsor didn't get their storybook ending. They didn't get to be state champs. That honor will have to stay, at least for now, with the team of 1924. That's right, we're back to my bread and butter, history. A century ago, in the spring of 1924, Windsor High School's boys basketball team did the unimaginable. They went from a scrappy group of friends playing keep away to a well-oiled machine, knocking down competitor after competitor in their bare-bones basement gym. They took the state title in 1924 and went on to compete in the National Basketball Championships in Chicago. And, well, they won. They became national champions. And they earned a new mascot name in the process, too. But don't worry, we'll get into all of that and more soon. Because you're listening to episode 36 of The Way It Was, When Windsor Became Wizards.
Cool. Okay. We're in business.
Cool.
How about them Wizards?
How about them Wizards?
A couple days after Windsor's championship game, I met our lead sports reporter, Kevin Lytle, in the newsroom to talk shop.
Windsor, I'm not a sports. I don't know if you knew this.
What?
I'm not a huge sports fan.
What?
I know. Shocker.
Breaking. How long have we worked together? Yeah, I didn't know this.
Kevin and I were both hired at the Coloradoan in 2012. Back then, we also published a twice-a-week sister paper, the Windsor Beacon. Kevin was hired to cover, among other things, Windsor sports. I was hired to cover everything else Windsor-related for the Beacon. When I started researching this 1924 team, one of the first things I found was an article Kevin had written back in 2014. It was a look back at the team and how it went from a somewhat aimless group of young men to national champions. I asked Kevin when he first heard about the school's national title.
I remember generally being in the gym. Now, it could have been volleyball during the fall, or it could have been in the winter when basketball season started. I remember two things. I think one, I'm in a gym, a high school gym. You know, you look around at the banners, you know, during timeouts or whatever, kind of, you know, you get to snoop a little history just by looking at the banners. You know, 'cause some schools have a lot, some schools have few, some schools hang a banner for everything, some are very picky on what to hang banners on, so I just like looking at those. So I definitely remember looking around Windsor's gym and seeing the banners, you see the state titles, and then you see the different one of a national title, and obviously from a long time ago, and that piqued my interest. So I'm sure that was the first thing I saw, and then I don't remember if I went looking or if I just happened upon the case out in the hallway that has a lot of the memorabilia history of that national championship team. So it's definitely just from kind of being around and looking around the gym, being like, whoa, that's different. Let me look at that.
And in your time covering high school sports, is this the only national title that you know of in Northern Colorado?
There's some. Fort Collins High School has some track national titles around the same time, actually, in the 1920s era. They have several in that range. But otherwise, I guess track is, it's a team title, but a different sports, you know, built on individual events. I think this is the only, like, true traditional team sport one that I know of in the area. It's the only one in basketball in the state of Colorado, on the boys' side at least. So it's, rare.
And let's speak more about that rarity, because it's impossible to be a national high school basketball championship today. Like, how has the structure of high school basketball in Colorado changed since that 1924 team was able to win a national title?
Yeah, yeah. Rare, you're right, probably isn't even the right word, because it's not even possible these days. You know, that Windsor, you know, team this year, if they had won the state title, either way, that was the end. That was the last game, win or lose. There are some tournaments that call themselves national tournaments, but they're, you know, kind of just pay-to-play invitationals, not a real national tournament. Obviously, the country has grown significantly, so they're, you know, back in the day when Windsor had this, you know, kind of just every town had their team, and those were your teams in the state. Now, obviously, there are high schools everywhere. I think CHASA is up to well over 300 high schools. So you have, like I said, six different classifications. So even if there were some mythical national tournament, you wouldn't even know who to send, because it's 6A down to 1A. Obviously, 6A would argue that has to be them. But just within the state, you get, you know, six champions in boys, six in girls. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have a single state champion, you have a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just completely different structure and everything, and kind of just the growth of everything, the world, and it's just a thing that doesn't exist anymore.
And my understanding is that it, even when it did exist, it wasn't around that long. It was kind of a short window of time.
Yes, so this tournament, I believe, was held 1917 to 1930 in Chicago. There were some different iterations of national tournaments. And then around the late 1920s, there started to be a black national tournament, because that wasn't part of the equation. You know, obviously, there was segregation throughout the country. So there was their own, you know, a specific black national title or national tournament that was held actually for a really long time. That carried on into the 60s. But yeah, this specific iteration of the tournament Windsor was in, you know, at the time, I'm sure what, you know, did feel like a long time, but, you know, looking back at history, it's a pretty short blip that, you know, teams were going to Chicago to compete for this national title.
Yeah, definitely.
So Windsor had this 13-year window to not only make it to, but win the National Interscholastic Basketball Championship. That's what the tournament was called, by the way. The odds didn't seem particularly in their favor. So how did this team, this little team from a tiny northern Colorado farm town, do it? Kevin and I drove down to Windsor to answer that. Off to see the Wizards.
Hi. You must be Michael. Mike or Michael, do you have a preference?
Doesn't matter.
Perfect. Nice to meet you. Thanks for doing this, Aaron.
Kevin.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Or good to see you again. I think we've met before.
I think we have.
That's Michael Thompson. He's a Windsor High School graduate and has taught social studies there for the past 9 years. Over the past 6 to 8 months, he said he's thrown himself into researching the 1924 championship team as the school gets ready to celebrate the 100-year anniversary in the 2024-2025 school year. Michael met us at the school earlier this year to chat Windsor basketball. He walked us past the large display case that houses an homage to the 1924 team near the school's auditorium.
Yep, you've got the game balls, the trophies. And then the plaques also are original.
He showed us the little archive of bound beacons and other newspapers he's built at the school.
Do the students come in
here? Approved students do.
And he sat down with us in his classroom to revisit one of Windsor's biggest claims to fame.
You always kind of knew about the championship, but it didn't really, the weight of it didn't really kind of hit you until later in life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's the same with students of today, or?
I think students are aware of it, but similarly, I don't know that they understand the weight of, you know, what a national championship means. You know, in their mind, state championship is kind of the pinnacle, and then anything past that is, they just can't fathom, I think, is more than anything else. But I'm really excited for this next year, because even if students don't know about it, they're going to know about it by the end of this year. And it's going to re-interject into, you know, this town's mythology, this town's story. So I'm really looking forward to that, because it'll be impossible not to know about it by the end of this next year.
As part of the school's big plans for the 100th anniversary of the national title win, Michael and Steve Klein, another Windsor High teacher, have been working on revamping the 1924 team's glass display case, which is now about 13 years old. Klein helped pull elements off of an old interactive digital display from the case. Photos, write-ups on the history of the team, even a recreation of a broadcast from its national title game. The plan is to refresh and move the display to a more prominent area near its gym. There, people will be able to learn more about Windsor's magical year. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's back up just a bit. In the early 20s, Windsor High School was known as the Windsor Bulldogs. The town was home to about 1,300 residents in 1920, according to the census. Windsor High School, well, it was much smaller than it is now.
We're between like 150 and 200 students in the entire school, as opposed to now that would constitute one class, you know, of freshmen would be, you know, well over that. But yeah, just little old beet farmers in northern Colorado go to the big city and win the whole thing.
By 1922, Windsor had a pretty poor reputation among its Northern Colorado League. Its sports teams didn't perform well, and its facilities, particularly its basketball gym, were subpar.
Whenever I hear the story of our dungeon, of our pit, of our gym, it just paints such a wonderful picture of the conditions of basketball back then. I mean, you think about it. I was watching a game last night, and a couple of girls slipped on the parquet, and they're talking about the condition of the gym, whereas, you know, you have exposed pipes that the ball is bouncing off of. You can't get a true bounce off of that floor because it's uneven. Not to mention, we saw the balls in the case. They have laces. They're not like basketballs today. But actually, it was a reason why they were almost kicked out of the league, because their gym was not of a regulation size. It was too small, and, you know, the fans are right on top, and other teams hated to play there.
Other Northern Colorado teams ultimately gave Windsor's boys basketball an ultimatum. Ship up or ship out. Win at least one game in the 22-23 season, or you're out of the league. Enter Coach Joe Ryan. The hardened former soldier came to Windsor High School to teach and coach in the early 1920s. And boy, did he whip those boys into shape.
I found the list of rules that Coach Ryan had for his players in his, like, how are we going to shape these kids up and, you know, change them. And, yeah, there's the stuff you would expect, like, no alcohol of any kind, no smoking of the cigarettes, which I appreciated the article on that one. But then as you go down, in bed 10:30 every night, no exceptions, respectful to elders, no cursing. And then my favorite one is the last one, stale bread and prune juice every day for breakfast. And it's just, so when I found those, the current head basketball coach, John Rakeski, teaches right next door to me. So as soon as I found it, it's, all right, coach, here's new rules to instill in your guys. Here you go. You want to win state? Stale bread and prune juice.
Ryan also drew on a local tragedy to get his players to change their perspective. Just before Christmas 1922, a Windsor High School senior named George Middleton had fallen through the ice and died while skating on Windsor Lake. Ryan galvanized his team around Middleton's death, and they got their act together. The Windsor Bulldogs didn't win just one game that 22-23 season. They ended up winning state. They went to the national tournament in Chicago that year, but were knocked off in an early round. So they just did it all again in 1924.
I'm just curious, like, what's your, like, if you have to, like, what's your favorite part of this whole story era? Like, if you have to distill it down to, like, one thing, that's the first thing you jump to.
I think what they had to overcome, it's truly out of something like a Hollywood script, even though it's experienced by a bunch of, you know, Volga Deutsch sons of farmers in northern Colorado. You know, in December of 22, they have a senior in high school, George Middleton, who's teaching an ice skating lesson. He falls through the ice and dies. And, you know, you have guys that are friends with George who are on that 23 team. Well, they persevere, they win the state title, but they don't continue and win the big one. And so then the question is, what do we change? Well, then here comes Coach Joe Ryan. Here's what we have to change. And you have two players on the team that are dismissed from school that fall previously. And we're talking major contributors to the team, and then they come back. you know, they completely revolutionize the offense of the time. You know, they get to Chicago, but again, they have to fundraise to get there, because if this were another team, you know, maybe they've got the funds and whatnot, but like I said previously, kind of hat in hand, you know, hey, we need some donations so then we can afford a trip to Chicago. But then also, you know, I think you can infer some things from the rules that Coach Ryan institutes what may have been going on previously. You know, you see a law down the street, you know, it had to be bad enough for someone to make that rule that you couldn't do that. So it makes you wonder, like, you know, that change, that adversity, but then also the togetherness of that group. I mean, there's a question when I've been going through the research, who is responsible for the wins? Is it the changes that Coach Ryan makes, or is it the team themselves? And I think it's a combination of the two, because, you know, that's a team by any contemporary accounts. They've been playing basketball together on the playground with a soccer ball ever since the first grade. And then you get that group of talent, but maybe they're lacking that vision, that direction. You get that inspiration. You get that direction from the right coach with the right group of guys at the right time. And, you know, everything kind of coalesces into that perfect situation where you can win a national championship. When I guarantee anybody at that place, whether or not they could pick Colorado on a map, they sure as heck could not pick Windsor on that map. Even if you spotted them Fort Collins and Greeley, they wouldn't be able to know where Windsor was in relation to the two.
Unlike 1923, in 1924, the Windsor Bulldogs made it back to the national tournament. They were these small-town kids headed to the big city. Among them was junior Larry McGlynn. Here's Larry's daughter-in-law, Anne.
Well, they talked about the press. He talked about what it was like, you know, coming from Windsor and how the town got together and the local dry goods. They called him a dry goods store. They got them suits. They got the boys suits and shoes and everything ready to go. And he talked about the train trip and, you know, it was small town going and being exposed to, you know, to big city. And, you know, one of the things, and in fact, he has a souvenir. One of the things he noted on the train going to Chicago, they had on the dining car, they had, I guess it was a sugar spoon, but it was a little spoon. Anyway, it was from the train, and he ripped off one of the, he stole one of the little spoons. So I think I have it here somewhere.
I just loved that. The idea of this little sugar spoon sitting in a box somewhere among Anne's things 100 years later. Here's one more story about the boys' big trip, this time from Michael.
There's a story of when they're at the hotel, you know, Coach, what do we do with our shoes? As you know, like, because someone in the hotel, like, leave them out to be shined. It's like, to leave my shoes outside the door? What do you mean? So, like, a lot of guys just slept in their shoes. It was the only time that they had suits and nice shoes and slacks, and, you know, they had no need for that prior to that one trip. And so, yeah, like, talk about small town kids in the big city. Yeah,
some country mice in the big city.
Yeah, exactly. And just how cool that must have been. You know, plus, too, they're playing in front of, you know, I've heard as much as 20,000 people, like, holy cow. You don't even have 20,000 people in your region, much less playing in front of that many people in one contest. It's got to be so cool. I mean, it's like Hoosiers, but, you know, more of a Northern Colorado version reality. Yeah, and bigger. So,
despite the culture shock that I'm sure Chicago was for these Windsor boys, they finished the job that year, defeating Yankton, South Dakota in the national title game on April 5th, 1924. They came home to huge fanfare, decorated streets in Windsor, a huge gathering in Greeley, and a very special stop at Windsor's hospital. Coach Ryan's wife Mildred had given birth to their daughter Patricia a couple days after the team left for Chicago. The Poudre Valley newspaper reported at the time that they kept baby Patricia's birth secret from the coach, just in case he was tempted to cut out of the tournament early. When the boys and Ryan visited baby Patricia, the newspaper made a quip about her being their new mascot. But they already had one of those in the works. You see, during this magical season, the local press gave the basketball team a new nickname. The boys had this really unique, quick passing style of play for the time. People have said it was because the gym floor that they played on was in such bad shape, they had to learn to play and pass the ball without it hitting the floor. They were whizzes with the ball. And eventually, that became wizards.
Yep, it was the passing of the passing like wizards. And actually, I found the first, and I'll share this with you guys, the first mention of wizard with regard to the team was actually February 28th in the Poudre Valley newspaper. And I actually clipped that this morning, so I'll share it to you guys. Because then it was that April article that I shared with you where they started referring to themselves as the Windsor Wizards from the Bulldogs. But that passing strategy, throwing the ball around like a bunch of wizards on the court.
It's like a have its time. That's, you know, it sounds like basically what we would call, you know, motion offense.
Exactly.
Like, it's just ahead of time.
Just think of, you know, how many times in a basketball practice, I bet if we go to the gym right now, they're going to work the three-man weave where it's pass, 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 pass without dribbles. That was revolutionary at the time. And I'm trying to think, like, how many teams earned their nickname or their mascot in their style of play. That's why I love the line that Larry McGlynn had in that that kind of reunion story and whatnot when the display case was made, is that it wasn't something we voted on. It wasn't something that was given to us. It was earned. And just one of those rare, like, we earned that, the class of 24, with our actions, with our play. And it's such a cool thing because it does change it from every other mascot in the nation. And, you know, I'm sure I could do a Google search to find how many wizards there are in the nation, but not that many. And I really don't know of any that the mascot is something like the Wizards. And so it speaks to the uniqueness, not only unique having a national championship banner, but uniqueness of how we got the mascot and what that mascot is.
So not only did the team of 1924 win a national title, they essentially gave their whole school a new mascot that would stick around for the next century. That's quite the accomplishment, in my opinion. According to Michael's research, the Windsor Wizards didn't end up making it to the state tournament in 1925. In 1927, they only won one conference game, and the school's boys basketball program remained pretty average until 1949, when they made it back to the state tournament. They returned again in 1955, making it to the second round of state playoffs. So that 1924 team, it was special. And what strikes me is that despite reaching the highest of heights, a lot of its members didn't really seem to talk about it much. These small town boys came home from Chicago as heroes. And from what I could find, many of them went on to lead remarkably normal lives. They had families and worked normal jobs at oil companies and car dealerships. One became a teacher and coach. Another opened a bait and tackle shop. I spoke with Anne, Larry McGlynn's daughter-in-law, as well as Matthew Van Mater, the grandson of team member Alonzo Van Mater, for this podcast. Both men ended up in California, where they raised their families, and both of them never really talked about their time as national champions. Here's Matthew Van Mater.
I remember we were at the park. This was a eucalyptus park down the street from where I lived with my parents. And Grandpa was there, and my dad was there. I was there. Brian was there. And I think my other brother, Larry, was there. And we were all just playing basketball at the park. And that's kind of when the story came out. I had never heard that story up until then. And he was out there shooting baskets. Like, he was just nailing shot after shot. I'm like, you know, who is this guy? My experience with Grandpa Van was, you know, Christmas dinners, and occasionally, like, we'd go there maybe in the summertime, every once in a while. But it wasn't like we were there all the time, maybe, like I said, 2-3 times a year. So here's a guy, just knew him as an old guy, and then he was just nailing shot after shot. It kind of came out that day, and he didn't tell me. He didn't tell – my dad told me while we're at the park shooting baskets.
What did he say? Do you remember?
My dad basically just said, yeah, hey, Grandpa used to play basketball. I'm like, oh, really? You know, it was just like that, like a matter-of-fact type of thing. He's like, oh yeah, and he played on this team, and they went to the Nationals. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I've never heard any of this.
Anne said that she had also never heard about her father-in-law's time on this team until the mid-1990s, when a man named Bill Bolander called. Bill, who still lives in Greeley, had become fascinated with the 1924 team and tracked Larry down to learn more. Larry was the last surviving member of the team. He died in 2002.
When Bill Bolander, you know, he had begun research and he contacted us. I mean, it was a roundabout way. It was like in 95. Even though growing up, my husband's, you know, he and Larry were real close, and they, you know, they shared a great love for basketball and so forth. But I don't think John really even knew about the championship. He knew that he played basketball and they had a championship, but it was not a big deal. It was not ever talked about. John didn't really know about it until Bill Bolander started talking about it. And then we started inquiring with Larry about it. And, you know, lo and behold, he began to talk about it. But prior to that, he really, through their lifetime growing up, he hadn't talked about it much. He was a real self-effacing guy, and it was just, you know, it was their life growing up. He didn't talk about it.
After years of relative silence about the topic, Larry McGlynn started sharing more and more about that 1924 team, starting in the mid-90s. That's also when he started making somewhat regular trips back to Windsor. He was honored at an annual parade one year, and another year he sat down for a sort of meet and greet with residents. He even signed little basketballs as souvenirs for kids. I asked Anne what she thinks Larry would have thought about us talking about the team all these years later.
Oh, he would be delighted. You should have seen me at that parade. Oh, he was like, you know, he enjoyed it. He he'd wave at the people. I've got picture photos of him in the back of, they had a convertible and he was waving and they made a big deal. He liked the limelight. He liked recognition. So he would have liked it, it's really odd because he never talked about it. You know, my John never really knew about any of this stuff, but once we started talking about it, he enjoyed it. He would be delighted.
Yeah. It was like he had all these stories behind lock and key, and you just, once that was unlocked, the floodgates opened.
Yeah, exactly. I would put it that way. You know, once it was acknowledged, and it was kind of like, it was just life, but it wasn't a big deal until somebody said, you know, this was a big deal.
Today, with 100 years between us and that fateful April basketball game, I can confidently say, without a doubt, it was a very big deal. It makes me think of something Kevin actually said back during our chat in the newsroom in early March.
This Windsor national title is one of the more fascinating ones, maybe the most fascinating one I've come across in my time here.
Yeah. 100 years later, we're still talking about it, so it's obviously very important.
That's a fun thing. I found that line in a paper somewhere, and it said, I think that line of, as long as there's a Windsor High School, they'll be talking about this team. And there's still a Windsor High School, and we're still talking about this 1924 national title.
That's it for this episode of The Way It Was. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, history nerds.